Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Coach Hurd has rejoined the program. Let's get into the list with him. The college football playoff. All right, Coach, we got our first look at the rankings last night. I would say it went fairly nondescript. I think the big takeaways, so we have Ohio State at 1, Indiana at 2, A&M at 3, Georgia at 4, I'm sorry, Bama at 4, Georgia at 5, Ole Miss at 6, BYU comes in at 7, Texas Tech is at 8, they play this weekend. Oregon was at 9, that was a little bit surprising. I thought maybe Oregon would be at 7, so we saw them at 9. Notre Dame is at 10, that was, I think, the spot that had most people upset. Texas was at 11, Oklahoma was at 12. While Memphis was not ranked, they were the highest-ranked G6 team, and therefore they were on the bracket. So the bracket, if the event were to start this week, the bracket would be as follows. The number one overall seed, Ohio State, would play the winner of Oregon and Texas Tech. That game would be hosted in Lubbock. Indiana would await the winner of Notre Dame and BYU. That game would be played in Provo. Texas A&M would await the winner of Ole Miss and Virginia. Ole Miss would host that game. And then Alabama would await the winner of Georgia and the Memphis Tigers. So while Memphis wasn't ranked, they were on the bracket. Did you have any big feelings one way or the other about last night?
It went fairly how I expected, like you say, with a little wiggle. It looked like Memphis was going to have that 12th spot, you know, and so that went as well as can go. Canes, I already knew. I told someone earlier, you know, although people down the ACC, I would rather be in the SEC where I know I'm about to play a good team every week.
Yeah.
The ACC is like, no matter how good you are, it's going to happen. You're going to play a NC State or somebody hot one week, and it happens. And so you have no Florida State, no Miami, no Clemson, which is crazy. You actually have Virginia. But it went by how I wanted. Some of the numbers could have been how I expected. Some of the numbers could have been a little different. But, you know, that's the kind of was my, you know, I don't know where you coming from with it, but that was the kind of, you know, my expectations for the most part.
No, I think to your point, they actually – I felt like last year the ACC got way too much love, and I think a lot of it was honestly just because Clemson ended up like getting their act together a little bit, so they got a benefit of the doubt. I think they clearly signaled they do not have great respect for the ACC, even to the point that you know the Big 12 was in favor, or, you know, ahead of them. I think the other big takeaway is the strength of schedule metric or whatever they're using. Welcome to the Big Ten SEC Invitational, because I think that's what it is now.
For sure. And that's somewhat deserving. You know, people were saying them two could get together without college, without the NCAA, if they really wanted to, the Big Ten and the SEC. So, I mean, they've been the best. I mean, we know we're getting ourselves into, unless they didn't lost a game or so. I know for a while Texas Tech was doing a great job.
They laid an egg when they went to Tempe with their backup quarterback and laid an egg against Arizona State. But last week they got Baron Morton back, who was their starting quarterback, and they just dismantled Kansas State. And then they have a big one on Saturday. They can avenge their loss or make up for their loss because they get BYU, who comes in undefeated, and they're like 10-point favorites. Like, that's the other thing about the Big 12. It's like, you know, like last week you had Cincinnati, who is coming in playing pretty well. They go to Utah, and they're like 11-12-point dogs, and, I mean, they just got absolutely eviscerated. It feels like maybe Texas Tech is in a spot to do the same thing to BYU this week.
Yeah. Texas Tech was a team that I saw that I thought was pretty scary early on,
yeah,
outside of the Big Ten and the outside of the Big Ten and the SEC, because the Big Ten got Indiana, Ohio State, and Oregon, right? There ain't nobody else since Penn State that fell off this year, right?
Let's see. Their next, so they have 1 and 2. They have number 9. Their next highest ranked team is USC, down at 19. Iowa checked in at 20. Michigan was at 21, and Washington was at 23.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But the SEC, do they have 5 of them in already?
All right, so the SEC right now would have 3, 4, 5, 6, and 11. So technically, Oklahoma is ranked 12th. But because Memphis would get the 12 spot, Oklahoma's out. And basically what they said was Oklahoma and Texas are the same thing. We're putting Texas higher because they won the head-to-head.
Oh, that's what – yeah, because that's when Texas got back on track,
yep,
when they won that game, because I think Oklahoma was killing it at that point. Okay, and so you got Oklahoma. Man, that's the best football right now, Jeff. We can't fight it. They had talked about Texas – somebody before it came out had said Texas, although they got 3 losses, they felt that they still.
Sark was campaigning that even 3, because their remaining schedule would be they have to go to Georgia and then they host A&M. The argument would be if they had 3 losses because they scheduled Ohio State, they shouldn't be penalized for that. And at this point, they still have the closest game that Ohio State has played all year. I don't know if I love it, but I think last night kind of showed, I think 3 lost Texas would be very much alive. I don't know if any of the other SEC teams could afford a 3rd loss and be in it, but I think they signaled that Texas could be.
They figured Texas could be. Yeah, that's what it looked like, too. And then Indiana and Ohio State don't play each other this year unless it's for the Big Ten championship,
right?
Maybe.
So they each have 3 games remaining that they'll be heavily favored in, and then presumably they meet in the Big Ten championship game, and that would sort itself out of who's won. You know, maybe the loser drops down to 3 or something, but that game would sort itself out. But there is also the question of, will Ohio State still have Michigan heebie-jeebies when they go to Ann Arbor? Because to me, the path for the Big Ten getting a 4th team in would be Michigan beating Ohio State the last week of the year. Ohio State would still be fine at 11-1, but that would get 10-2 Michigan into the playoff.
Got it. And you know what? I give the board credit. They give you a lisker, but Jeffrey, they usually do it right on the first couple times when the pressure's not on them, if that makes sense.
No, like, I think you're right. I think they get a little bored during like weeks 3 and 4, and like they just kind of want to shake it up a little bit. But yeah, no, usually the first one is like, you know, it's funny. Somebody ran a BCS simulation.
I was just about to pull it up and send it to you.
It wasn't exactly the exact same, but it was close. So basically, like, what they're doing now is like they're kind of having the computer rankings spit it out, and then that's basically what they're using. Which, to be clear, that's what I want to be honest. I don't have a problem with it. I think Brett McMurphy was actually on this show during the summer, and I thought he nailed it. Well, I didn't really have a problem with the BCS, particularly in the era that it was, because I didn't think there were a bunch of teams that were capable of winning a national championship. I think 1 versus 2 kind of worked. But his point was, the problem with the BCS wasn't the computer rankings. The problem with the BCS was they just picked 2 teams. Like, if you're picking basically, like in every other sport in college football or in college sports, we use metrics that basically set the field. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of what they're using right now.
Yeah, yeah. Like you said, the problem is how they picked. I think when we got the four, we was pretty close to getting it right. I thought, you know, six probably would have been the ideal number, maybe eight. But then I'm with college sports. It's about making, you know, money too. So at that point, they were just like, well, we know for sure we can't mess it up if we go with 12. Like the winner is going to be somewhere.
I think you're right. I actually think eight is kind of a clean number. But I've decided, to your point, they were never going to do that because of the amount of money they were going to leave on the table. I just want them to stick with 12. I think 12 actually rocks because making the playoff feels like a legitimate achievement. Yeah, Tennessee wasn't happy with how they played in the game against Ohio State, but it turns out Tennessee just happened to be the first team that was playing machine-based Ohio State. But, like, making this, I think, is a legitimate achievement. And you still keep it special enough that it's not, like, too bloated and whatnot. My biggest complaint with it is just it takes too long to play for 12 teams. Like, we're spending, like, 5 weeks to play basically, you know, what it should be, in my opinion, like 3 weeks worth of games. I guess 4 weeks worth of games.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that they can never go past 12. I like it, but
yeah,
I don't think you ever go. You know, for some reason, this is odd, Jeffrey. My ideal number, well, like you said, once they open it up, they're like, oh, no, it's too much money. We got to open it up. It makes 12 teams feel successful, which, you know, that should make you. This is odd, but six was my ideal number.
What's your logic?
Well, the logic was, you know, the two never worked right.
No.
It just never worked.
Well, I would argue they always got it right, but I do, as a device, yeah, I'm with you. But, like, to me, every single time the right team won, I guess the biggest argument you could make was the year that we saw LSU win their national title because the computer spit out Oklahoma. I still think that LSU team was the best team, but, like, I don't think the Auburn team that went undefeated, like, I don't think they got left out. I think the Auburn was fortunate that Auburn didn't have to go play that USC team. But, like, it was just never – when the sport had gotten to what it was, just having a 1-2 was never going to work.
No, it wasn't going to work because I don't know if you remember this. It was some years where, like, I know, like, with Miami or other teams, 2 and 3 was always, like, hard. You knew who number one was.
Yeah.
And then, like, if 2 won it and 3 won a bowl game, they would claim, like, we –
Yeah, USC – like, so the year LSU wins in 03 when they win their national title, it was a split because USC didn't get into the championship game, but USC won the AP poll.
Yeah, they would say we were splitting championships and all of that, and – which I think was a little crazy if you didn't play in the championship game. And so I was like, 4 just makes sense. And then what I started seeing with 4 was it was actually good, but what was that year that a few years ago when Georgia didn't get in after being back-to-back?
So Georgia went 12-0 and then lost to Alabama in the SEC championship, you're right, as twice defending national champion. They lost to Bama in the title game, but they also had like a weird setup where one of their non-con games got like canceled, and so their strength of schedule was like awful because they ended up like they replaced a decent non-conference game with like Ball State, like it was another MAC team, and because of that it was like. But then you also had Florida State get left out in the last year of the four-teamer. Florida State was undefeated, but because they had the quarterback, because Travis got hurt and they looked awful against Louisville, that opened the door for the committee to just walk right in Alabama.
Yes, and that was the year that somebody put online that I agreed with and said, look, let's have an emergency meeting. Who I forgot who was the strong 1 and 2, and I would do it. And they was like, let the other four teams play each other. And then the winners play in the Final Four because you remember it was 6 teams, like you just named, whatever Florida got in, plus Florida State and Georgia was well deserving. You know, I felt Georgia. What was it? I think we let Washington in. Maybe was it
the last year? The four teamer was Bama. Bama got in as the four, and they played Michigan at the Rose Bowl, and then 2 and 3 was Texas against Washington.
Texas against, and for some reason, yeah. I didn't think Texas had got in. People were mad at me because I think Texas had beat Alabama earlier the year. I'm just like,
yeah, Texas had that weird. It was like they got the weird, they lost in Red River to Oklahoma, but then I think they beat them in the Big 12 title game. But you're right. In the end, the ultimate holdup was we thought going into the final rankings because Florida State was undefeated, everyone thought the argument was going to be between Alabama and Texas. And even though Alabama was the SEC champion, Texas got the nod because they went in one in Tuscaloosa. But then what happened was they were just like, well, we'll use the cop out that Florida State doesn't have their quarterback. They're not good enough. And then we'll just move Alabama in. And rather than like having this argument of trying to put Alabama and Georgia and then leave out Texas and Florida State, they're like, well, they kind of compromise. Like, we'll put Alabama in, but we're keeping Texas in too.
Yeah, they compromised, and I think it hurt Georgia most. So, yeah, that was my take, Jeffrey, on six. I don't think it ever was a time in history where it was seven that deserved to be in. But you know what? Maybe if we kept six too long, we would have got to that right. And so 12 does open it up where I feel like even though you can cry, Tennessee can cry, we could cry last year in Miami. You had to do enough stuff wrong yourself to get in.
Yeah, I mean,
I
didn't feel like last year we left out a team that was going to win a national title. Like, do I think Alabama could have won a game? Yeah. Do I think probably Ole Miss could have won a game? Maybe even won two? Like, I think Alabama and Ole Miss, yeah, they could have. But I don't think either one of them were beating Ohio State. Like, like, my thing is, like, as long as we're not leaving out someone that I think has a legitimate chance of winning the national championship, like, I'm cool with it. But, like, I want it to still feel like it was an achievement to make it. And I think you're right. I actually, in theory, I would like six if we still had conferences that made sense. But now that we've got these basically two superpower bloated conferences, like, I kind of liked the idea of, in an era where we still had five, the Power Five and then the G5, I liked the idea of each conference champion getting in and then the best G5 champion getting in and playing it like that. But I think now that the conferences have gotten so big and bloated and they're just so unbalanced, I think you kind of have to weigh that.
No, I'd agree with that. Yeah, especially with the SEC being that powerful, that would – that definitely will be messed up. So, no, I agree with that. And like you said, there's nobody who got left out that could have won it. Me being crazy or naive, I actually think our offense was so good last year, and we played the wrong team. I think Miami could have maybe won a game or two.
I think that offense could have given a lot of teams problems.
Yeah, as long as we could, the defense would have got scored on every time, but as long as we could get 30, 40 points, which we did, I think it would have made it, pretty exciting. So 12 is a good one, Jeffrey, and I'm just looking to see how things shake out. And I do think Memphis got a chance looking at the remainder of their schedule to hold on to their spot.
No, I think what was good last night for Memphis, I'm sure some people were upset and annoyed that they weren't ranked, and it probably didn't help that Tennessee was still ranked. The thing that they laid out last night to me that was very clear is if Memphis wins out, they are going to the playoff. Like, it's very simple now. To me, the only issue with the UAB game is I think losing UAB probably kept them out of the rankings, because I think if they don't lose to UAB, I think that they would have given them the hat tip and put them in. But now it's very simple. It's like you beat Tulane on Friday, you go and you win it at ECU, and then if you beat Navy and then you host the championship game and you win, you're in. Like, it seemed to me last night that they clearly stated the American, whoever wins the American, unless like it gets really nutty and like a 2 or 3 loss team winds up winning, I think they stated last night the American is going to be getting the bid.
Yeah, and Tennessee and them know that. Like, if I'm Tennessee, I'm mad, but the rules came out, what, last year or the year before that you know that it's going to be a non-power team to make it, right? Everybody knows this, right?
Yeah. So, well, and then on top of that, it's like if you're Tennessee, you kind of know, hey, we took a third loss, and the problem that Tennessee has is while I think they're a good team, they don't have a single win that you can point to. Their SEC wins are Mississippi State, Arkansas, and Kentucky, who have combined for two SEC wins, one of which is against each other.
Yeah. Yeah. They were saying, didn't Tennessee lose to Oklahoma over the weekend?
They did. Like, that was, and, you know, hey, man, you had a home game against OU, and that was your chance, and you turned it over three times.
I can see OU being a little mad because they were saying during that game, like, they thought the winner of that game would be in it. That's what the commentators
I mean,
saying.
I guess if Oklahoma, I still feel like controls his own destiny. Like, they're going to go to Alabama next week. It's like if they win that, well, now you've got this situation where this is where it starts to get fun. I don't expect Oklahoma to go and win in Tuscaloosa, but I be honest, I didn't expect Oklahoma to go and win in Tennessee either. But then if you give Alabama its second loss, then you're now in a spot where Alabama's 10-2, Oklahoma's 10-2. I think they both get in. But you're going to be in that spot where if, like, let's say enough chaos happens that extra teams enter the equation, well, then Alabama could get knocked out.
Yeah, I feel like everybody that they had in the playoffs, plus Tennessee, plus Oklahoma, I wouldn't be too mad because that's the great thing about the SEC. I think they all control their own path. Like, the guys is already in there. Plus Oklahoma and Tennessee, depending on how it play out and went out, they all still got a good chance of controlling their own destiny being right there in the middle because some of them guys still play each other. There's so many high-level SEC games left that I wouldn't be super mad if I was in the SEC because you actually, what we all ask for in life, you get to control your own destiny to a certain extent.
I guess, George, I want your thoughts on this. Do we think Vandy's still alive? So they ranked Vandy at 16.
Right.
But Vandy's remaining games are Auburn, Kentucky, both at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to Knoxville. The problem that I see is they're sitting at 16. They don't have the opportunity to, like...
They don't have that huge signature win potential on their
board.
Like,
and they don't have people in front of them that they can knock down.
Right.
So you have two teams that are not even ranked.
Yeah, and then you have Tennessee in there, which, I mean, that's clearly no easy task to go into Knoxville, last game of the season, rivalry weekend, all of that.
I mean, I guess to a certain degree, Virginia and Louisville will work itself out.
Right.
Utah, I guess you could say they jumped them, but, like, I think they would have a problem getting in front of Texas and they're going to lose a head-to-head with Texas.
Right.
And then I think they'd have a problem if Oklahoma were to win out.
Yeah, to me, there's really no way for them to jump some of the lower-ranked SEC teams unless they take multiple losses in the last couple weeks of the season here.
Yeah, I think that might hurt. That might be the only SEC team that kind of has an unfortunate path in front of them.
Is Vandy.
Yeah.
You might be right on that. Like I say, unless some people in front of them, like you say.
So you basically need – so BYU and Texas Tech, I think really what you want is – I think you want, honestly, BYU to win that game in Lubbock because that would give Texas Tech two losses.
Yes.
If you finished with two losses ahead of Texas Tech, like if you have two losses and they have two losses, you're going to be ranked ahead of them. So I think you need BYU to win. I think you'd like to see – somebody knock off Oregon, but you also are in this spot where you don't need like Oregon to lose to Iowa and then have Iowa run the table the rest of the way because then Iowa gets in at 10-2.
And that pushes them up and they've got the signature win then.
Yeah, I think really I think you could make the argument the biggest loser of the SEC teams last night was Vandy.
Yeah, because Vandy played their butt off most of the year. But I got to give it to Texas. Although Texas have underachieved most of the year, it's like they won every game they needed to stay on path. Like they were down.
I also think Texas is. I think Texas is low key scary.
Yeah, they were down. They beat Oklahoma. They were down. Vandy was as hot as you think they could be. They had their worst game against Texas. You know what I mean? So it's like Texas is still a team that has won when needed to win. And as long as they end the playoffs, you have to worry about them.
Well, they also have young quarterback who's starting to play well. Like, everyone wrote off Arch, and it's fine. Arch played bad. Like, I'm not dismissing. Like, it was bad against San Jose State. It was bad against, like, the Sam Houstons of the world. Like, I'm not dismissing it. But the last 3 weeks, he has played really well. And so now you have a situation where young quarterback is starting to play better. Their defense is still one of the best in the country. Like, yes, they gave up a bunch of points in the fourth quarter to Vandy, but that was also, hey, man, they were trying to, like, keep it safe, and they had a buzz. Like, they start with a busted coverage on one where they're just trying to sit back, and it looked like they had 10 guys on the field, and they bust that coverage. But then also it was just kind of like, all right, keep it in front. Let's let the clock run out, and they kind of got caught. But I think – we can look back and seeing, like, when a team was down 17 on the road in Starkville, like, comes back and wins that game, like, that is the start of their championship DVD if they were to figure it out. Because if I'm sitting there as a six seed and on the other side is Texas, like, that is not what I'm looking for, because they still have the talent to be that good.
They have the – is Arch a sophomore or junior?
Redshirt sophomore. So it's his third year in college.
So he can go to the league.
Correct.
Actually, he's playing, to me, so much better these next 3 weeks. Now, tell me, maybe I'm pampering it too much and it's his money. But if I'm Arch Manny, I come back next year, Coach.
I agree.
Strong.
I mean, I guess a lot of it depends on who gets the number one pick. I still don't know if he would end up being the number one quarterback. But I also think that everyone that wrote it off saying, like, how dumb it was that the number one quarterback was going to be Arch, if he were to come out, I am not convinced that he wouldn't be. Like, I think that is still very much in play, because you're now going through, all right, it's like him, Mendoza, who else has played themselves into the conversation?
Early in the season, we could have said Dante Moore.
Dante Moore's going to be a part of it. But
he also doesn't have to come out this year.
I think the other thing that the quarterback should start thinking about, especially now that you can get good money, now you would make more money in the NFL, and I'm not going to tell somebody to make a business decision one way or the other, because I wouldn't want them telling me. But I think the quarterbacks that you've looked at that played a bunch of college football, those are the ones that have come in and had the most success early. Like, even a guy that I don't supremely believe in, Bo Nix, because he played 15 years of college football, like, he came in and was pretty good considering in the NFL. Same thing with Penix. Like, Penix played a ton of football. Jaden played a ton of football. Like, I think the more college football you play, the better.
And I agree with you. And I also think, as good as Archer have played the last 3 weeks, I just think him having a better year.
Totally agree. Put a whole season together. I'm with you. Put a whole season together.
Yeah, beginning to the end, confidence from day one. Because, you know, if you're looking shaky day one this year, imagine how you might look in the NFL. You feel what I mean? Day one. So I think he come with
On top of that, you know, so Peyton plays all 4 years. Mm-hmm. Eli played three. Like, he was, whatever, he was a five-year guy, but was a starter for 3 years. The thing about Arch is, his only other experience other than mop-up duty before this year is playing, like, private school Louisiana football.
Exactly.
And then you're making the jump up.
Yeah, and the guys that have done that, some of them been successful. Like, what's our boy name at the Colts? Like,
Daniel Jones?
No, he's actually playing good now. The one that's
Anthony Richardson. Richardson.
But because of the immaturity, like, yeah, he was athletic and he had 8 great games in Florida. But sometime I think you need a look more before going to the NFL, like you was just saying, Jeffrey.
I will say this, though. If the goal is just to get drafted and you don't care about your career, like, I think there's an argument. I would not want to draft him at all. I do not love Lenore Sellers. Like, I have a real problem with quarterbacks that cannot make throws, and he continues to do that. But there's an argument if you're just trying to get drafted as high as possible, and we know he's a physical freak that's going to test. Like, there's an argument for go pro because the more tape you have on you, the more people nitpick you. Like, I think this worked against Michael Penix, where because Penix had played so much football and he had so much tape of him throwing, people started really overthinking it. Now, I still would argue he went probably realistically where he should have. Because, like, if we look at it, every team can laugh all they want. Every team was going to pick Caleb Williams one. I just don't buy into that. Jaden was rightfully went number two. We're seeing Drake May should have been the third. Penix should have been the fourth quarterback based on those three guys. And that's where he ended up getting drafted. It was a weird route where the Falcons took him after paying Cousins, but like he went the right way. I can see where if you're someone that like it's if you know that you're going to get drafted basically just on God-given ability, I can see going pro, but I don't think that's what's best for your career.
And then where you at in life, too, like not sure. To count a guy pockets, but we do know all know on this phone, like even if he didn't make it to the NFL, I think Archie Manning is pretty good in life probably.
Arch Manning at 21 years old is going to make more money than my wife and I will ever in our entire lives combined at 21. Like he can never play another snap. Like he's probably already made 15 to 20 million.
Yeah, and me and my wife, and I don't even have a wife yet, right? Mixed with yours, right? But I'm saying even outside of NIL, I just think he was going to be a kid that's set for life. I think his family and him was going to make sure he was good. Saying that now, that kid from South Carolina, I would go if I was him, if you're saying he's the first rounder, because I don't love how South Carolina is playing this year, and I think it's making him look bad. So unless he's finna transfer, and I know his dad went on the big rant of he turned down so many millions and loyalty. And I'm with it. I ain't no South Carolina hater, but it's something about him and that team that don't look good.
I think the question, because I do agree with you, like, to be fair to Lenoris, it's not like they're blocking it up for him. Like, he's getting in the snap, and he's running for his life. Like, I do acknowledge that. He still, like, has trouble seeing the field. I think the question for Lenoris would be, should you go pro or should you go to another school? Because I can tell you this, if he puts his name in the portal, that might be your quarterback at Miami next year.
And I'm good with that, but I tell you this for that kid, future of me and you with his mentors, I think if he go back to South Carolina, he might drop drastically in the draft for next year.
He might not make the year, despite being an absolute freight train.
Yeah, and he even looked, because they're not blocking for him, you know, people start nitpicking, like you say, like, he looks smaller this year for some reason. They still have him first round right now?
So Kuiper has him, like, late first. But, you know, I mean, Kuiper had Shador as the number one prospect. I'm not trying to pick on Mel. Like, that's kind of the other aspect of it. I don't know how many teams were in love with Anthony Richardson. I only know the Colts were. And that's all it takes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I thought people were starting to get on his wave that year, if I can remember.
He exploded at the combine because he is so physically gifted.
Yeah, he forgot what sport he was playing, though. He asked to come out.
That is still, to this day, I've never seen a quarterback tap his helmet. It was like a receiver that had just run five straight go routes.
Yeah,
like coming to the sideline. I was like, hey, buddy, you just kind of scrambled. Like... Like what?
He got his position, did it? Yeah. Jeff, or he thought he was in basketball. I'm like, since that day though, Jeff, I think he have subbed himself out of a lot of opportunities. Like, no, for real, like it hadn't been the same. He started at one point, but I think he got it so young he'll get it back going. But
he's too talented enough. Like, he'll get another shot, but does he get another shot to be a starter? Like, I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if he wants a job, he'll have one. But, you know, I don't, like I said, I don't know if we see what Daniel Jones is doing right now with the roster, we're finding out the rest of the roster really wasn't that bad. Like, I don't know if he'll ever get a better shot with that kind of talent around him.
The state of Indiana is really good at football right now. Hoosier State is good at football from college to pro level.
It's a football state, as everybody knows. It's a football state. All right, Coach, you're good to join us. Thank you.
Take care, my guys.
That is, of course, Coach Hurd. When we come back, I think we have our update on what Fox is doing with Mark Sanchez. I'll tell you about that when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company. 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
According to Andrew Marchand of The Athletic, future Hall of Famer Drew Brees is returning to the broadcast booth on a full-time basis as a Fox NFL game analyst, which could mean that the embattled Mark Sanchez is done at the network, sources briefed on the move told The Athletic. I will let you know, if that detail is included in the very first paragraph, they have told Andrew that that means that is the end of Mark Sanchez. Brees will begin his career, Fox career a week from Sunday, according to sources. His exact game assignment is not yet known. He will work as an analyst the rest of the year and is signed up to call games through at least next season. The exact terms of the deal are not yet known, but is expected to be for multiple years. Fox and Brees have agreed and signed a contract, and a signed contract is expected soon. The move gives Fox a big name 1-2-3 punch for its NFL Sunday game slate, with Brees joining Tom Brady and Greg Olsen as their top analyst. Okay, so there's a couple of things here. So if they just pair, like if he's just going to be a Sanchez replacement, then he will be with Adam Amin. And yep, okay. Brees is expected to be with former play-by-play announcer Adam Amin. That's, they left that up.
Yeah.
Has he gotten better? Because we basically, what did we do? Like, I feel like we went one and done with him. Was he with NBC? They put him on, was it NBC with like Notre Dame coverage?
That sounds right. And then correct me if I'm wrong. Since then, he's mainly been a panelist slash analyst at places. Most recently,
he's been doing a lot of ESPN stuff.
Yes, he's been a weekly spot on First Take.
Yes. And I guess he could still do that, although they don't like,
they don't like double dipping.
Double dipping. So, yes, he was the color analyst for Notre Dame games, and then he was on Football Night in America, and then he did, like, the – when they would occasionally have, like, the B-team game, he would do that.
Yeah.
It was not good.
As a color guy, I don't remember it being great. I don't mind him kind of as these, like, hits and as an analyst. He seems fine doing that. I do wonder if he's improved. I'm curious.
Was he also with, I guess I want to be fair to him, was he also with Jack Collinsworth? Did they both get demoted at the same time?
That.
Or was he with Dan Hicks calling Notre Dame games? Because if he's with Dan Hicks, it's worse.
Yeah.
Like, if you ended up having a bad booth with Jack Collinsworth, that's kind of a,
sure.
That's kind of tough. But if he was with Dan Hicks, who's like an actual pro, that's not great.
I'm definitely curious.
I also wonder if Fox just truly doesn't care. Because, I don't know, do you feel like Brady's gotten any better? I don't feel like he's gotten better. I feel like that I'm just more used to him. And my expectations very low.
This might be the worst situation.
Was he with Tirico?
He was with Tirico.
Because I couldn't remember at that point if Tirico was still calling Notre Dame games.
He was. So this was 21-22.
Yeah, that's not good. Tirico makes everybody look great.
Yeah. If you can't get it done with Mike, I mean, that's the pros pro of pros.
That's not great.
I'm more leaning towards
Fox maybe doesn't just care, though. I think
that's
Fox
my
is just
thought.
I think they just want names.
I think that's it, because sure, there have been points of like bright spots, you could say, this year with Brady, where it's okay, he seemed like he's gotten better. But I think the product overall hasn't changed that much.
I just am upset that his camp billed him as something that he wasn't going to be. I actually think if Tom Brady, they were billing him as, you're not a big golf guy, but there was a guy named Johnny Miller that was the all-time great analyst. But Johnny was like hypercritical.
Yes.
But Johnny was telling the truth. And if Brady was going to be, which is what they billed him as, I think that would have been much more interesting. I still contend the two guys that have done this right have been Peyton and Eli, because being an announcer is a different skill than just knowing football. Do I have any doubt in my mind Tom Brady has forgotten more football than I'll ever know? Zero doubt in my mind. But it's a different skill to sit there and be able to articulate it in a very clear, concise manner in the fashion that TV needs. It's part of what makes Aikman, the more you go on, the more you realize like Aikman's really good at it. And unlike Romo, he didn't come in with like a parlor trick. Like Romo came in with the old parlor trick of calling the play, and that got him a lot of buzz. And then the further and further Romo got away from playing in the league, he didn't have the familiarity. And then I think also he probably started reading his press clippings. But Peyton and Eli doing the, hey, we don't have to go and be professional broadcasters. We're going to sit on a couch, watch the game, and then talk to each other.
That's
like, I think that was smart.
Very. I mean, the biggest part there is the fact that they're doing it on their own terms.
Correct.
They aren't putting themselves in the box of play-by-play and color.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll tell your story next. I'll tell you why I think I now have to be a Dak guy for the first time in my life. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, for today's Don't Tell These Story, tell your story. We get a freaking Draymond Green. Now I have to be a ride-or-die Dak guy. I've always believed in Dak. On his podcast, he's getting some numbers, and they stink. Dak's a bum. They will never win with Dak. I have to be a Dak guy. I just have to be, like, at this point. Like, first off, hey, Draymond, why are you talking about Dak? Maybe were you betting on the NFL, and maybe he didn't cover for you? Just saying. Maybe.
Now we have to put in a question.
We have to ask.
Well, not just that. Does Draymond know ball? God. I don't think he knows ball.
We're going to be stuck with him for the rest of my life.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's just going to be, it's going to be awful. Ugh. Want to thank Jason Munns for joining the program, as well as Coach Hurd. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.